Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. For those fed up with incessant political ads and breaking news, there is relief in sight. Or is there? Although November 5th is just 1 week away, no one can predict the outcome nor tell us when we will have final results. That's why Newsmakers has invited two Wisconsin experts to join us today. We have Henrik Schatzinger, who is the director of the Center for People and Politics at Ripon College. And we have Joe Heim, who's the former chair of the Department of Political Science and Public Administration at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have to start by asking you, I know it is your career, political science, but do you ever get tired of all the political ads and the polls that we are receiving?
Well, I am teaching currently a class on campaigns and elections, so I certainly enjoy all the excitement about the election. Having said that, all the negativity in those campaigns and sometimes how the truth is being stretched, to put it carefully or cautiously, it's about time, I would say, that we get to the end of the campaign.
Are you ready for it all to be over?
Yes.
As well,
I will tell you, I've been working on campaigns for decades and I've always enjoyed them till this year. I am looking forward to the end of the campaign because it's just gotten so negative. 90% of the ads are negative. There's a lot of stretching of the truth. You're not sure. I get mail, you know, they're doing a lot of direct mail this time as well. A lot of the stuff is simply out of context on both sides.
Well, we'll be talking about all the money that's been spent on all those mailings shortly, but I want to ask you both, too, what is one main thing that you'll be looking for in this final week of the election? What are you paying attention to?
There is a lot of media coverage about early voting and to what extent does this benefit one or the other party. But there are so many different ways to interpret the data. So I think this is something I do not pay a whole lot of attention to. But I do think it's interesting to look at some information about the ground game, possibly last-minute endorsements or some possibly big campaign events with people like Obama, with Beyonce, and those things. I do think those are interesting.
Is there anything in this final week that you think could make a particular difference?
It's kind of a question of message. What message are they going to use? My understanding is you have two choices. Basically, you go with personality, you criticize the personality and other things that the other person has done, or you go positive. These are the issues that I'm running on. This is what I will do if I become whatever. So it's kind of that's what they have to decide, which way they want to go.
Which final message?
I think one of the candidates, the Harris campaign, is trying to do both. It's interesting. And of course, the other candidate, Trump, doesn't take directions real well. So you might want to have a certain message in your last week, but he doesn't necessarily follow it.
So Wisconsin sure is white hot in this election. I'm wondering if you agree that we are the state to watch, or are you like others who say maybe it's Pennsylvania? They have 19 electoral votes. Is Wisconsin the state that will decide things, or do you disagree with that?
I think there's no one state that I think is going to be the controlling state, although it's pretty clear that Pennsylvania and Wisconsin seem to be the highlights of the visits. The surrogates and the candidates, president and vice presidential candidates, are spending a hell of a lot of time here.
Are you banking on Wisconsin as the key state, or do you disagree with that?
I would say that Pennsylvania is still just a little notch above it. If we just look at the path to victory, look at the blue wall states, obviously, for Harris, with Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. But at the same time, for Trump, if he wins Georgia and North Carolina and Pennsylvania, that's also a ball game for him. So to me, things still lead through Pennsylvania in many ways.
Through Pennsylvania. So this week we'll be getting the results from the final Marquette Law School poll, which many consider the gold standard of polls in Wisconsin. In many ways, this seems a little bit like a redo of 2020, and I want to take a peek back to what those poll results look like in 2020. We're looking at the September 2020 results, which had Biden ahead 46% to Trump's 41% in late September polling. This included third-party candidates. In similar polling in 2024, Harris is ahead of Trump 48% to Trump's 44%, again, including those third-party candidates like Robert Kennedy Jr. The margin of error, of course, for both of these polls was around 4 percentage points. That final poll of 2020 conducted in late October showed little change, with Biden up 48% to Trump's 43%. Of course, we know in 2020, Biden ended up beating Trump by less than 1 percentage point here. Joe, I'll ask you, is it fair to compare 2020 to 2024?
When a little bit. There was one of the arguments about 2020 was that there was a hidden vote for Trump, that people in the polls did not want to say publicly they supported him, so they said undecided or whatever. I read an article recently that suggested that it might be the shoes on the other foot. In other words, there might be a hidden vote for Harris rather than for Trump. Maybe people are more willing to say, I'm voting for Trump. So that's kind of, that's why the polls are undecided. Even though the polls have somebody ahead, I don't think you can count on it.
People have been questioning the accuracy of polls, similar to what you said. Are they actually capturing people? They were pretty far off in the percentages this last election. Well, how are you looking at polls in this election?
So for me, the main issue is what we call non-response bias. So people who are not willing to answer those questions and not participate in those polls. And as Joe said, the bias used to be more on the Trump side. And so they have tried to make adjustments, but also in terms of methodology and how they reach out to voters and using more text messages and QR codes and those kinds of things to make those adjustments. Whether those are sufficient remains to be seen.
So do you think the polls are more accurate this time around?
I hope so. The pollsters have had a hard time doing polling because people don't answer their phones, or they're doing online polling. They're doing different techniques than they've done in the past. They think they refined the polling that they for example, in 2022, they were better. So they think they've figured out the nuances of the polling. You know that. And everybody knows that there's quality questions about polling. The Marquette poll is in the top five nationally. So I trust the Marquette poll as much as any poll in the country. 4 or 5 days after the last Marquette poll came out, had the Democratic candidates ahead.
In 2022?
Yeah, 4 or 5 days later, there were a couple national polls that had Wisconsin virtually tied. So, you know.
Would you say watch this Wednesday poll result pretty carefully?
Yes,
in
absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The candidates are not letting up on their visits to Wisconsin. You mentioned some of the visits, former President Trump and vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance in Wisconsin this week. Last week we saw Vice President Harris and former President Obama making stops here. Did these last minute visits make any difference to people's decisions?
I do believe that those visits are an important signal to voters, but it's also a matter of where you go specifically in those last days. And if I were, for example, more of the Harris campaign, I think it would be more important for her to go to Milwaukee to get those turnout visit, because in Madison turnout is already very, very high, so I'm not sure how much you really can gain. So I think you have to go to places where people need a little extra push at the last minute.
So the visits are more about enthusiasm of getting voters to actually vote.
I would say so.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
What can former President Trump say to his supporters in his final pitch that might make a difference? Is there a message?
Well, I think it's the Biden-Harris camp. He's tying those two together. To me, that's his message right now. He's trying to say that whatever happened in the last 4 years, That's her fault that she did it. We all both know that vice presidents don't make decisions. And that's one of the issues going on is, how do you focus and tie those two together, basically?
And you think that's effective for them?
Yeah, I think that's been effective for them, basically. And that allows them to bring up immigration, inflation, things that post-COVID issues, basically.
Same question about Vice President Harris. What's her most effective final pitch in this last week?
I think the biggest struggle that she has had is to really differentiate herself from the Biden administration and to make clear how is she different. And I think to this very day, she has been kind of struggling with that. So just kind of pointing out that she's not sort of Biden administration 2.0, but there are clear substantive differences because I do believe that people want to see some change. For Trump, my answer would, whatever he says at this point does not really matter a whole lot. I think it's more important what she actually has to say.
So Democrats have really banked on the issue of abortion in the last several elections, and it was had a surprising impact in those 2022 midterms across many states. Do you think that the issue of abortion has the potential to have that same sort of impact in this election?
Maybe not quite as much. It was newer the Dobbs decision was newer at that time. Right now, 2 years later, national polls show it number 3 and 4. Like the economy is number one, inflation number two, maybe. And to certain people, however, abortion is the big issue. Reproductive rights, as you would say, basically. So, yeah, that's one of the growing themes of been through the entire campaign for a lot of candidates.
So if we wake up on November 6th and Vice President Harris has won, would you go back and point to the issue of abortion as a key reason for why she would have won?
I do believe that would be a right assessment because in my sort of understanding of this is that the economy is, yes, it's number one issue for many voters, but you have to capture people emotionally. And the abortion issue and captures a lot of fear among voters, especially among women, and it gets them out to vote. So you really have to focus on issues that captures voters, like abortion.
It seems as if the Trump administration has certainly been all in on immigration and border security, but we're also hearing more about transgender issues. Mm-hmm. Are those issues working for them, would you say, Joe?
It does serve a certain number of people. But I think it's as much as anything, it's to rev up the base, to remind them of the other side's problems. So I think it's basically, it's not intended for like everybody. It's intended to a relatively narrow base of people that would be affected or concerned about men going into women's bathrooms and vice versa and sports and things of that sort.
So if we wake up on November 6th, then former President Trump has won. Are those the issues, immigration, border security, and even transgender issues? Are those what we would be pointing to say that's what won it for him?
Yes, I would. There would be a multiple. I think certain issues are important to certain clientele, and that's why you're hearing three or four things that are directed at certain people, certain groups of people.
What about the economy as the issue? You know, voters have been saying that is their number one issue, but you just brought up emotion. So what is going, when that undecided person goes into the voter booth, is it going to be emotion or the economy that wins out?
In my opinion, it's no longer the economy, stupid. It's your emotion, stupid. In the sense that since 2015, ever since Trump started to appear on the political scene, what we have seen is a highlighting the culture war issues. And there is something called a cultural backlash theory among academics. We would say that citizens are sort of, they think there's been too much maybe progressive change on the cultural front, and this is where the backlash comes into play. So I do think there is a good reason why Trump is highlighting the transgender issues and immigration, because the emotion here is especially anger. People are upset about some of the things that they have seen, and it gets them sort of riled up.
Would you agree our emotions running higher in this election than
absolutely
in past?
Hate, negativity are the big issues right now. People say economy is number one, but there's a apparently a lag between statistics and the people's feelings about the economy. And that's why the economy is still number one, even though there's a lot of Democrats are pointing to statistics that show the economy is actually doing pretty well.
It's not what people are feeling, or at least the information that's being given to them. Another unique factor this year has been endorsements of different types. You mentioned a few of them. We have Vice President Harris celebrating with Beyonce. We have former President Trump with Elon Musk. We have former Republicans, or Republicans like Trump's former Chief of Staff, General Mark Kelly, coming out and talking about Trump as a fascist. Even state-level Republicans here in Wisconsin have weighed in, but also the Washington Post refusing to make an endorsement. Mm-hmm. Well, how important are these endorsement conversations in this election?
I don't think they make a lot of difference. People don't say, well, so-and-so is endorsed him, I'm gonna vote for that candidate. I don't think that's the way it works. I think it does enthuse the supporters, and it allows larger crowds. You know, you have Obama or Michelle Obama there, that draws out people. Beyonce draws out people. I was expecting a song, by the way. Am I wrong?
Right.
I was expecting a song. There was no songs
at
all.
Must be copyright issues.
Yeah, it was all a talk. It was all talk, but that huge crowd. And the intent is to enthuse the crowds, and that's why the endorsements are there. This is an unusual year that you've got a substantial number of Republicans who have endorsed the Democratic candidate, and that's very unusual in my mind.
What do you think about all these endorsements or non-endorsements?
Well, I will point out also some media misinformation that's been out there. So after Taylor Swift supported Harris, people, there were some reports saying that, there were 406,000 new registered voters after they went to vote.gov, but they only visited the website. That's a big difference, being, you know, registration and visiting a website. And of course, then the big step is, are they actually, even if they registered to vote, who is going to come out to actually vote, right? Especially among the young people. So I agree that endorsements is not going to make a difference in this election. However, if Taylor Swift does come out in the last few days, who knows?
We'll have to measure that,
yeah.
Right? And she should include a song as well.
I hope so.
There often is a gender gap when we look at how people perceive elections. It seems to be widening this year. Would you agree with that? And will that continue?
Yeah, a really good question, and I think it is actually the widest, or it's going to be the widest this year compared to previous elections. It's certainly a really old concept, and it's been around, but it's never been as pronounced as it is in this election. However, I would caution that this is something that necessarily needs to go on, because I feel there's been so much time and effort and money being spent on this election. Whoever is going to lose, I think, will have to do some serious soul searching within the parties and see who, you know, what do we need to do to really capture some of the voters that we haven't gotten. So, some people say this is just a trend that will just continue and continue, but I think there is a real chance that actually this election will initiate some rethinking on that.
What about trends with minority voters? We're seeing some shifts with the way Black voters and Hispanic voters specifically are maybe counting their votes. Do you think that's something that will continue?
It is, yes. At least for this election, Donald Trump seems to attract white males, African-American males, Hispanic males. Seems to be doing a better job with that. It really has to do with his personality. The abortion issue, the fact that a woman is running the other side, nobody talks about that misogyny issue, but that's a factor which I think you have to recognize as well. So the abortion issue plus just having a female run, I think a lot of women may want to think, you know, it's time for a woman to be a president. So that helps them. That won't necessarily be there in the next election.
Shifting to the U.S. Senate race, the Cook Political Report just moved that race between Mr. Hovde and U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin to a toss-up, as Hovde seems to be closing in. What do you think will ultimately decide that race?
So I think the messaging, first of all, has been a very negative campaign, right? Mm-hmm. And so the question is really sort of which message is stronger. Is Hovde this out-of-touch, out-of-state outsider, or has Baldwin really changed and become too woke, you might say? And so I think those different messages are out there, and we'll see how this is going to play out. I think initially, the Baldwin campaign really was strong in painting him as this outsider who doesn't have sort of Wisconsin values and so forth. But given all the money that's being pouring into the campaign, I think he has sort of fought back pretty hard. And but at the same time, now she's counter-messaging and says, hey, you're making my personal life such an issue. Maybe you've gone too far here. And this is also inconsistent with maybe our values here. So
are there certain regions of the state or voter groups that are important in this particular race?
I think it's a traditional urban area, suburban areas versus rural areas. I think you probably know nationally the rural areas have been voting more and more Republican. Urban areas seem to be voting more and more Democratic. The suburban areas, they even differentiate between the inner suburbs versus outer suburbs. Inner suburbs seem to be moving a little more Democratic. I think they're still Republican, but their percentages are moving a little bit more towards the Democratic side. The rural or small town further out suburbs are still Republican and strongly Republican. So it's a geography makes a big difference in this election.
Wisconsin also has some hotly contested congressional races, specifically one in your home area, the third, between Rebecca Cook and Congressman Derek Van Orden. Wispolitics reported that just on Friday that Rebecca Cook has consistently outraised Mr. Van Orden. Does that mean that she has the edge because more money is pouring in for her?
I think he's an incumbent, and there's a certain automatic advantage to that. She, however, ran 2 years ago and was running against a candidate who the Republicans with Van Orden. He had run previously, by the way, and almost beat an incumbent Congressman Ron Kind. So he was running the second time, as an incumbent almost. And the same is true for Cook. She ran 2 years ago and ran very strong in the primary, Democratic primary. And I think you have to understand that It's a big district. There's a lot of rural areas, a lot of urban areas. She is working really hard. She's got a lot of money. A lot of groups are from out of state or out of areas are coming in with money supporting her. And that's one of the issues in the campaign, by the way. Van Orden people are saying she's getting outside money. She's too liberal. She's too radical for Wisconsin. She works very hard, and that's an advantage that you don't necessarily see publicly.
It makes a difference in that purple part of the state, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Is there anything you're watching for in that particular race or the other congressional races, for that matter?
No, I kind of refer to Joe on this one.
That's his area.
I'm looking at two other races.
Well, I'll ask you about something that I know is in your expertise, the fundraising part. Millions upon millions of dollars being spent, not just on the federal races, but also in some state races in Wisconsin. What are some key takeaways around political fundraising and spending that you're seeing?
Yeah, maybe just to put a couple of numbers out there so we get a little bit of a perspective on this. So looking at the presidential race, I see about right now, I mean, of course, we're still in the campaign, about $2.5 billion with about $1.4 billion for the Harris campaign, about $1.1 billion for Trump. So Harris has the money advantage. However, she was also and still is sort of less well known than Trump, so she needed that to kind of get out some of the more messaging. And conventional wisdom says money at the presidential level actually matters the least. If you kind of go down in races, then it can matter more. If we're just looking at one more, the Wisconsin Senate race, I had to look at the number like two or three times just to kind of make sure I don't mess it up. But I'm looking at $177 million in total spending and about $102 million for from outside groups in this race.
That's both candidates.
Yeah.
And just in Wisconsin.
Exactly.
Yes.
So $102 million for both candidates just in Wisconsin, which is about 58%. So one thing is important to understand, even in the presidential race, it's about a little over 50% of outside money. So what we see is that often like a 60-40 gap between outside money versus 40% by those candidates. So it's a tremendous amount
of money.
Most
expensive races that we've ever seen.
Correct.
Here.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Joe, I want to ask you about some other races, including the state legislative races. I know we have new maps in our state legislature in Wisconsin, and there are some purple seats that are in play, particularly in Western Wisconsin. What are you looking for? What's the most interesting race?
It's 94th, I think it would be, in my opinion, the most interesting of Western Wisconsin. 94th and 96th are very competitive. 32nd Senate District, not as competitive as I would have expected. 4 years ago, it was like 51-49. This year, it seems like the Republicans have not put nearly as much money into it. But the 94th is the one that I think people are looking at around our area. And that's Ryan Hipsch,
who's
the son of former Speaker of the Assembly, Mike Hipsch. And, you know, Steve Doyle's been a multi... That district's been 50-50 for decades. And Democrats have held it for a long time. Republicans have held it for a long time. And Doyle is... one of his basic themes is reach across the aisle, basically. He believes he's a moderate candidate that that basically can work with both sides. So he always he's Mr. Moderate, basically. And he's running against almost a semi-incumbent who ran against him 2 years ago and just barely lost, Ryan Hipsch. And so Ryan Hipsch is more energetic, in a sense, and going door-to-door, things of that sort. And that's why, and by the way, the amount of money spent on that, $57,000, I think it's a salary per year. There's supposedly going to be $2 to $3 million spent in that race.
And just one small assembly seat.
Yeah.
We are getting close to our end of our show here, but I want to ask you, in these final weeks, we see Democrats ramping up their ground game. It seems as if the Trump campaign is doing more on outreach to low propensity voters. Who do you think has the more effective last week campaign strategy?
So it's really an interesting situation where Republicans are really relying more on these outside groups to run their ground game. So the outsourcing the ground game is not something that we are really accustomed to. And we really have to see how this, if this is working. I would be more comfortable as a Democrat with their more traditional ground game that they are doing, and reaching out and trying to capture those low propensity voters. It's a good idea, but those are the hardest ones to get, right?
It's so a gamble.
It really is a gamble. Are they going to come out? It's a really tall order, and I'm not sure the people on the ground have the expertise to really kind of move them to the polls on election day.
It'll be something to study after this election,
very much
for sure.
So.
When do you think we'll have the final election results?
When?
Yes.
Oh.
When?
Well, you can count it being after midnight. The way they talk about the absentee ballots and the early ballots, we're not allowed to count. I found it interesting that the Republican legislature did not want to allow the people that do the counting do it 2 or 3 days in advance. You could avoid this last minute 2 or 3 a.m.
In Milwaukee is the concern.
So it's
you think we should know in Wisconsin after midnight? You don't think it'll take longer than that for Wisconsin anyway?
I think probably 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning, maybe the next morning might be when they finally get. It depends a lot on how many mail-in ballots there are and how many early voters. It looks like there's quite a few at this point.
What about national results? Will it be that quick?
No, it won't, because as we can see, the polls are that close, so that's really an indication of the final results. They're going to look at all of this stuff very, very closely before they kind of make final determinations of the outcome. So, no, I don't think we have to be patient, I believe. And with early voting being as high as it is, all of this takes longer to really process. So, I think our patience might be a little bit tested here.
Do you have concerns about unrest or any sort of dispute after the election?
I'm an optimist and don't think we're going to have national riots going in, big demonstrations, things like that. I just don't, maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't think most Americans want to do that kind of thing. So I don't expect that, but I think the courts are going to be heavily involved with this campaign, the election, especially presidential elections, for the next month or two after the election.
Yeah, there are already cases that are simmering pre-election. What do you think about a dispute or any unrest? Are you worried about that?
So, Nate Silver has said if you look at the election night, there is actually a pretty good chance that we might have some correlation among these polling errors, which then would mean the results are more decisive than they may look like right now, which I think then would kind of ease some of that. But, of course, if it comes down to a few thousand votes in like one or two states, that builds up pressure, right? And that's where we might see some more serious sort of consequences, which I hope won't happen. But I think it depends a little bit how tight it's going to be.
Speaking of pressure, I want to end the show by asking you if you could give some advice to voters on how to ease their own anxiety in this final week of the election. What's your advice?
Don't watch television ads. I know some of my friends that watch those things a lot, and they're getting really, really tired of the campaign ads. And I think they turn them off, basically, or that increases their anxiety because they're such negative ads. And if you're in favor of some candidate and the other side's running a negative ad against them, you get upset about that.
So turn it off.
And of course, I have heard people talk about having an extra drink or two that day as well.
What's your advice, Henrik?
Well, I think I just saw a headline that said there will be a mental health crisis immediately following the election. So my advice would be limit your media intake, as Joe said. Engage in some physical exercise, enjoy your hobbies, but also maintain perspective, right, and focus on what you can control in your own life. So no matter what the outcome will be, life will go on.
That is very good advice. We'll end on that. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.